spend our day consciously so that every new day can be that new beginning.
Hello and welcome to Kill Radio. You're with DJ Blind Chaos hosting the show Behind the Bars of America. I'll be taking you through into approximately 1 o'clock or 1:30 this afternoon, depending on what happens. Now, basically, we're just running a little bit late today, but I wanted to introduce the show. The show, on an ongoing basis, is primarily an alternative broadcast focusing on the policing of dissent in the United States and other countries, police brutality, specifics about the Patriot Act, and how this criminalises minority groups is discussed. Live media will be offered within the framework of the prison industrial complex and how political and social prisoners are treated in the context of modern capitalism. Women's issues in prison will be covered. Listeners will also have an opportunity to learn about genocide within the context of direct action, colonisation and imperialism. Protests, rallies and conferences will be covered live. Today, basically, there'll be a mix of things on the show. One of them actually being an interview with an Australian activist who will be documenting and explaining about how he may become a political prisoner. He does have a court case coming up, so we'll also be discussing a few issues around the G20 that happened over in Melbourne, Australia, where hundreds of activists were brutalised by police, and there have also been a number of arrests. And there'll be a Mamiya update and lots more. So we'll now go into some music, and I'll contact Stuart Highway, the Australian activist who will be coming on air shortly. So stay tuned.
Thank you.
And you're back with doing time. Sorry, you're back with Behind the Bars of America. I'm getting mixed up with the Australian show I was doing. We have Stuart Highway on the line. He is an Australian activist, and he got up really, really early in the morning because this is a very special activist who's done a lot of really amazing work. And he got up in the morning because of the incredible time change between America and Australia. So, Stuart, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Marissa.
Yeah, welcome to Behind the Bars of America. So, I wanted to talk to you about a couple of things, really, and I made a comment on the show prior to you coming on, and I mentioned that you may become a political prisoner. Can you explain to listeners some of the events leading up to that, obviously not discussing legal strategy, but some of the events that led that may lead up to that, or that have led up to that?
Yeah, well, we've got an organisation here in this city of Darwin in the Northern Territory of Australia called Network Against Prohibition, and we're human rights activists specifically focused on ending the war on drugs and the human rights violations that involves. And we're specifically formed in 2002 to combat the Northern Territory's legislation, what they call the drug house legislation, when they came out with this new draconian policies that they could raid a place three times the police on and reasonably suspicion. There didn't even have to be any drugs there. They just had to have a reasonable suspicion that someone there was under the influence of something, and then they could declare that a drug house and put a big green sign on the front door, and that would allow them to raid as many times as they want, as often as they want, without a warrant. So that sort of thing, and it impacts primarily on people of low income and people, non-white people, like Aboriginal people, Indigenous people in Australia. And so we just thought this is outrageous, and we did all this series of actions as the Network Against Prohibition, or NAP for short. And one of them was we stormed the parliamentary chamber while the parliament was in session, the Legislative Assembly in Darwin, on the 14th of May 2002. And we did this action, and we got sentenced and for that. We got sentences of 21 months or 18 months, suspended after 5 months in 2003. We got sentenced. But since then, we've been going through the appeals process, and we've appealed twice to the Northern Territory Supreme Court, and they failed. We tried to appeal to the High Court of Australia in the National Capital, Canberra. They wouldn't let us do that. So now we're facing a sentencing appeal on the 12th of February, and we've had adjournments. All this time, so it's been over 3.5 years now, getting on for 3 years and 8 months, and so we're facing a jail sentence. As it stands, we've 5 months jail to serve. So the 12th of February, we've got an appeal against the severity of the sentence. And at the moment, we're trying to get a different judge, because that's the one that we've got this same judge that sentenced me to 3 months in 2005 for another action.
What were the charges?
Against prohibition. And this judge doesn't like protesters, so we're going to try and get a different one that's maybe more less harsh.
So just to clarify,
so that's how it stands at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Thanks a lot for updating listeners on that. But just to clarify that, you mentioned that you were in prison for 3 months or so. What were those charges that came out of that action?
Well, that was one of the smoke-ins. We've been putting on these community smoke-ins and rallies, and the idea is that we set up every month or 2 months in a public park right in the middle of the city, and have this community, it's smoked cannabis, and which is illegal, and most of the time the police just leave us alone. The authorities have just realised, well, it's, they don't want the publicity, whether it's negative or positive, and so they just try to ignore us, hope we just give up and go away. And twice out of those 30 times we've had trouble, the first one and the sixth one, and the sixth one was on October the 12th, 2002, and the police, I think there was some kind of set-up, and they were trying to crack down on us, and they intervened, and people fought back against the police, because and it got a bit violent, and some police vehicles were damaged, and they made a big thing out of it. A few people got arrested, and I was charged and convicted of one of the windscreens or windshields of the police vans, and it got broken, and people were lobbing, pelting the police vans with bottles and things. People were annoyed at the party being broken up. It's just basically a forum for people, and people, we have an open mic, so people can speak, and people come along and play music, and it's a community thing, and it's, no, it doesn't do any harm. And so this, that was what I got 3 months for in 2005 for the, from the unlawfully damaged property from the sixth smoking. And that 3 months, I did 2 months of that in maximum security in the Darwin Correctional Centre.
Yeah, because you're primarily from the Northern Territory,
aren't
you?
Got down to medium security for part of that, but in a dorm, and dorms in medium security. But I, a couple of times, minor infractions, you end up back in maximum security.
So, Stuart, what can you just explain to listeners about the background to the campaign that you're doing? Because I know that often what tends to happen, and also I'm including the left in this, is that they often demonise drug campaigns. Can you explain just a little bit about the background to the whole thing?
The background of, well, it's, we see this war on drugs as a civil liberties issue and a human rights issue, and it's and it's just another excuse the governments, and in this case the Northern Territory government, is using as a pretext to take away people's rights, and they it just enables them more so than ever to do what they want, and just grab people and put people in jail, and it's in the, at the moment, it's the Northern Territory. It has the population of 29% of Indigenous people, the Aboriginal people of Australia, black people, and they, while they only make up 29% of the population, they make up 81% of the prison population, and it's so obviously there's something wrong there, and it's the poor people that end up in jail overwhelmingly. So, and it's been hard to explain to people, like white people, and in Darwin, the capital of the Northern Territory, that this war on drugs is an issue. It's a major issue, because these white people, mostly they don't end up in jail for drugs or anything else, because they've got a, they can afford a decent lawyer who can keep them out of prison. And so it's a class issue, and it's a race issue, as well as a human rights and civil liberties issue. So there are all these things, and and Aboriginal people and people on low incomes, you talk to them about, you know, how the war on drugs is a human rights violation, and they know exactly what you're talking about. But these, some of the white people, they don't realise, because they think, well, I can go and smoke a joint any time. It's just go and buy some cannabis and then smoke it, and it's not a problem. What's the issue? Yeah.
Often, Stuart,
understand.
Yeah, it's true what you're saying. And often, Stuart, I think what tends to happen also is that if you look at a lot of Aboriginal communities and a lot of other community members even that are white, although I know that primarily according to statistics and according to a lot of the legal advocacy of the work that I've done over the years, you do have a lot of Aboriginal people in prison and deaths in custody, I might add. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that basically you've got warrants out for the arrest of people who are probably not even taking drugs at all. Would you say that's correct?
Yeah, well, that's it sometimes. And there was a case in the... there was a big article in the paper, and it was been on the news. A woman was just sitting by herself outside a pub in the city on the weekend, and she got arrested and locked up in the police cells for 6 hours. And she went to the paper and told her story and said, "Well, you know, how come I got arrested?" And she was just sitting outside. And they're just not doing anything. And she said she'd had about 5 beers over an evening, and she wasn't drunk. She wasn't causing problems or anything. She wasn't out of control. And the police came along and said, "Move on." And she said, "No, I'm not doing anything. I'm just my right to sit here." And so they arrested her You know, that happens all the time to black people, Aboriginal people.
Yeah.
But it's this white person, she decided, well, you know, I could have complied with the police directive and moved on. But I thought, well, why? You know, it's my right to sit here. And and she got locked up. And basically the police can do whatever they want. I mean, we know that. And if anybody who's had experience with the police knows, and they just... basically do what they want, and these laws with the drug laws make it easier for them to get away with this abuse of powers.
So Stuart, getting back to you, because I know you've had your fair share of interesting encounters with police, haven't you? I remember an occasion, was it 2004 when you and Gaz, who's now passed away, were taken by police?
Was taken by police? Was that... you mean the time
the
we got... they got arrested... They arrested us by mistake?
Yes.
And put us in prison?
That's right.
For the Parliament thing?
That's right.
Yeah, that was late 2004. And... the three of us just got arrested. I just got arrested after going out for a late night walk, and I saw these police hassling homeless Aboriginal people, and I went stopped to see what was going on, and they saw me and arrested me and said, "Well, your appeal was dismissed. Why didn't you hand yourself in?" And I didn't know what they were talking about, what appeal, and I didn't say anything. But they thought that, you know, there'd been a warrant issued, and someone made a mistake, because we were still going through the appeals process, and when they put you in jail, you can't do much, you can't organise your appeal, because we were acting for ourselves. We were representing ourselves in court, and we didn't have lawyers, so... it made it really difficult being locked up, and we wanted to be out too, so we can organise our defence and appeals and stuff, because there's, you know, work to do. You have to prepare things, and it's difficult to do things from in prison. And so we got locked up for about 2 days before, and we protested it, and we ended up having to ring the ombudsman which is government person you complain to for about government departments like police, and we had ended up ringing them from the prison yard and saying, look, it's been a mistake, you know, we're still going through our appeal process, we haven't finished, and we have the right to remain outside prison, and they let us go. So that was good, because it was kind of scary how we just they just grabbed us, three of us at night. It was like, you know, Gestapo or something.
So you've had a number of instances then where that's happened, and you've served your prison term. Where does that leave you now? Have you got a suspended sentence now? Are you on a suspended sentence for the last charges?
We've only got the one sentence, and as you mentioned, Gary Meyerhoff, he passed away on October the 8th last year.
Well, that's one brother they can't get, eh?
Sorry?
That's one brother they can't get.
Yeah, and I think they were sort of worried about putting him in prison, because they knew he was dying, and of age-related illness, and it would have been embarrassing for them if he died in prison as a political prisoner, and they've got this so-called left-wing government in the territory, as all the states and territories at the moment have got left Labor Party governments, which is kind of equivalent of the Democrats in the US, I suppose, and it's that they're supposed to be a little less harsh than the other party, the right-wing party, the Liberal National Coalition parties. So, yeah, he died, and then it was kind of makes it a bit easier for them to put the rest of us in prison. There were two of us left. And, yeah, it's been a whole saga. A few people pleaded guilty. Some of us stood our ground and pleaded not guilty. We said that the police and the government were at fault.
Now, you're talking about the other set of charges? You're talking about the previous set of charges here, Stuart? The ones that you were in prison for? Allegedly breaking the windscreen of the police car? Are those the charges you're talking about?
Well, yeah, we were... I was sentenced for that and jailed, in prison for that. But, at the time, Gary Meyerhoff, he was too sick to stand trial. I thought we were going to be all together in the Supreme Court, and Gary was too ill. He was stressed out. He was, it was terrible. And two other activists, I thought they were, you know, we were going to be together pleading not guilty, and they decided to plead guilty, and they avoided jail, and they sort of apologised and said they realised it was wrong and stuff, whereas I didn't apologise. I just said, well, we did the right thing, and it was the police who were wrong, and they got hammered because of that, because particularly this judge, this lawyer who's been helping us, he said this judge doesn't like protesters at all, so... Yeah, he was pretty harsh and made an example out of me.
So, Stuart, I was wondering if you could now provide details to listeners about your upcoming court case and how listeners can help.
Well, that would be great if people from America could... support us. On the 12th of February, we're due to go to court, and against this, it's a kind of a disturbing the Legislative Assembly while it is in session. It's a special law. We weren't aware of these laws when we carried out the action, and we didn't realise that it was so serious. But it carries a maximum of 3 years, so. Potentially, they could increase the sentence to 3 years prison for this. We've got a website, www.napnt.org. That will provide details of what's happening and with our cases. So if people can check out for themselves, and if we do go to prison, they might not go, send us to prison. We don't know. We don't know even know on the 12th, because they might give us, if it's going to happen, they might adjourn it till another date, till we get another judge, because we've asked if we can get another judge, and maybe we'll protest. We don't want on the 12th, if they still give us this same judge, because we don't want him. He's so if people could email the website or write to the address of the prison is Darwin Correctional Centre, PO Box 1407. That's 1407, Darwin, D-A-R-W-I-N, N-T, zip code 0801, Australia. That's the address to write to if we do get locked up.
I was going to say, you're acting like you're already going to prison.
Sorry?
But it's good to preempt. It's actually good to give out the address to listeners. I'm just having a bit of a lend of you, Stuart. Don't worry about it. I know it's pretty early in the morning over there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 6:15 in the morning, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Stuart, it's been wonderful having you on the program, and the reason why I wanted you to come on is because I think often what tends to happen with a lot of activists, and I include you in this, is that activists often do so much work and they don't get recognised for it. And I just felt that you're a very good activist, and I wanted to have you on to talk about some of the campaigns that you have been in, and to talk about your possible prison sentence, and to see what can be done for support. So just to summarise the interview, we've talked with Stuart Highway, and Stuart has been involved in a number of different activist campaigns, and we've talked about his court case coming up because of trumped up charges, and we've discussed the drug war in relation also, I believe, in relation to genocide, colonisation and occupied territory, because really that's what it's about in many ways, isn't it?
Thanks, Musa.
Thank you so much. Well, we'll be in touch and come back on whenever you wish, and perhaps when it gets back to the court case, gets closer to the court case, we can have you back on.
Oh, thanks, Musa. I really appreciate this support.
Oh, no problem. And
publicity.
Yeah, and Anarchist Black Cross in Melbourne, Australia, and also Anarchist Black Cross Federation here in Los Angeles will be monitoring this case on an ongoing basis. All right. Will you take care of yourself?
Okay. Thanks, Marissa.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. See you.
Bye-bye. And we're now going to go into a song. Actually, before we do go into that song, before the interview with Stuart Highway, we heard Earth Crisis.
Holiday in Cambodia.
Holiday in Cambodia.
A remake from Dead Kennedys.
A remake from Dead Kennedys.
From the album Last of the Same.
From the album?
Last of the Same.
Last of the Same. we're now going to go into a song.
We'll be right back.
And you're back with Kill Radio, and this is Behind the Bars of America with DJ Blind Chaos. You just heard a song by Earth Crisis called Children of the Grave, originally made by Black Sabbath, and this song is from the album The Last of the Same. And yeah, just to kind of recap, you heard an interview previously with Stuart Highway, an Australian activist who may be imprisoned. In February, he has a court case coming up, and if you want to hear the show and you don't have time to hear all of it today, you can actually download it from the archives at Kill Radio and Radio for All, hopefully. Next up, I wanted to read out an update about Leonard Peltier. Leonard Peltier is a Native American prisoner who is incarcerated in one of America's brutal prisons, and he has been falsely accused and has trumped up charges, and appeal after appeal has happened for our Native American brother, but to no avail. So here's a message from the Leonard Peltier Defence Committee, and it's titled Freedom Now for Leonard Peltier. February the 2nd, 2007 marks the 31st anniversary of Leonard Peltier's illegal extradition to the United States from Canada using coerced and fraudulent testimony. This was the beginning of his odyssey that resulted in his false conviction for the June 1975 murder of two FBI agents on the Pine Ridge Reservation in Fargo, North Dakota, 1977. During the 1977 court hearing, presiding Judge Benson ruled all evidence must be tightly limited events of the day of the shootout, June 26, 1975. No mention is allowed of the reign of terror preceding the shootout at Pine Ridge, nor of Myrtle Poor Bear's false affidavits, nor of the FBI intimidation and coercion of witnesses, or of most of the evidence that had led to the acquittal acquittal by reason of self-defense of Rabuto and Butler. The judge declares the FBI is not on trial here. Judge Benson ruled that Leonard could not present the same evidence Rabuto and Butler had been permitted to show Leonard, too, had acted in self-defense in a shocking and flagrant display of American injustice. Virtually all expulsory evidence is hidden from the defense or ruled inadmissible. 31 years of injustice. Freedom now for Leonard Peltier. 31 years later, Leonard Peltier remains in prison, even though the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled there is a possibility that the jury would have acquitted Leonard Peltier had the record and data improperly withheld from the defence been available to him in order to better exploit and reinforce the inconsistencies, casting strong doubts upon the government's case. Yet the court denied Mr. Peltier a new trial. Leonard Peltier remains in prison. 31 years of injustice. Freedom now for Leonard Peltier. 31 years later, the FBI has over 140,000 pages of material evidence that have never been made available to Leonard Peltier or his attorneys. Documents are supposed to be automatically declassified after 25 years under Executive Order 12958. The FBI is arguing that this material should not be subject to automatic declassification because it could damage or cause serious damage to national security and the so-called war on transnational terrorism. The FBI also claims that the release of the withheld documents would reveal the identities of confidential sources. Mr. Peltier's lawyers have argued that there are nothing more than pretense to prevent the release of further evidence of the continuing violation of Mr. Peltier's constitutional rights, and further drives home the fact that Mr. Peltier never received a fair trial. On February the 6th, 2007, Leonard Peltier supporters around the world will be holding rallies, public forums, marches and events to protest his 31 years of injustice. It is Leonard Peltier's request that all support groups nationally and internationally work under the direction of the Leonard Peltier Defence Committee. The LPDC will be sending announcements with updates on events, projects, activities, rallies and information regarding Leonard Peltier. Contact the Leonard Peltier Defence Committee and join us in solidarity and unity to bring Leonard Peltier home. Contact us and let us know your plans, ideas and support for Leonard Peltier. Freedom Now. Contact information for Leonard Peltier Defence Committee. The email address is info@leonardpeltier.net. I'll repeat that email, info@leonardpeltier.net. The phone number is 915-533-6655. The website is www.leonardpeltier.net. So there are a number of ways that listeners can assist with the release of Leonard Peltier, and more information will be forthcoming about the upcoming rally on Behind the Bars of America at Kill Radio. We're nearing the end of our show. I just wanted to play a statement by Mami Abu Jamal from the prisonradio.org website. But before I do, I would be very interested in quickly reading out a short article about the G20 protests in Melbourne, Australia. There has been a lot of police brutality and repression around the activists of the G20, and I wanted to actually read out a media report. There have been a lot of arrestees, and on Kill Radio in the next couple of weeks I will be bringing you live coverage from Australia, interviewing two of the arrestees from the G20 who have had very severe bail conditions and trumped up charges. So here is an article from indymedia.org. Sunday afternoon, which is back in November, a group of 50 demonstrators were beaten and trampled by police during a peaceful anti-G20 protest inside the foyer of the Melbourne Museum. A woman was severely injured after police used batons and fists to disperse the small group of singing, dancing demonstrators. Several hundred police, including two divisions of riot police, were deployed in the incident. The group consisted mostly of women and included musicians and children. "We were given no warning and were not asked to leave before police charged," said one of the demonstrators. Members of the group were badly shaken after the event, and the severely injured woman was hospitalised with suspected broken ribs. "We were singing and dancing at the front of the Melbourne Museum as a non-violent way of publicly raising our concerns about the G20, said one of the demonstrators. "Without warning, we were baton charged by heaps of cops. It was frightening, especially when a couple of busloads of riot police turned up afterwards. Police only called an ambulance to attend to the injured woman 10 minutes after the incident, despite repeated requests from members of the group. Protesters afterwards attempted to disperse peacefully but were followed for 20 minutes by a large police contingent. Today's incident follows on from 2 days of protesting against the G20, a gathering of finance ministers, reserve bank governors and the heads of the IMF and World Bank. During the G20 meeting in Melbourne, Indy Media operated a mobile reporting station which provided crack squad media coverage from the FBI. Media coverage from the Friday 17th to the 19th of November. I've got FBI on the brain. What's going on? A van equipped with a computer running Linux, wireless internet, a two-way radio and a mobile phone allowed for on-the-spot reporting and support for independent media makers. The India Media van's first assignment was to an inner-city location where a pink Cadillac filled with dirt to house numerous endangered plant species, as well as a 12-volt solar-powered sound system, had been surrounded by about 15 police officers. The Cadillac was liberated later that day and became the focus of a spontaneous low-key party outside Parliament House. The party was violently dispersed by about 100 police who displayed a high level of aggression by actively chasing and beating people. An ambulance attended to several people who sustained injuries, and the Indymedia van was used to remove a concussed and distressed person from the scene. Throughout Saturday, a steady stream of people dropped by the Indymedia van to upload video, write stories and charge batteries. After a police transport vehicle was trashed, the police baton charged protesters and the Indymedia van was caught behind police lines. While other journalists were ordered out of the area, the van remained and continued to publish live reports. Meanwhile, the mainstream press continued to publish distorted and predictable stories about the G20 protests, resorting to the usual unsubstantiated claims of protesters throwing urine at police. And it goes on. So I will be bringing you live ongoing coverage from the G20 protests. I think the thing that listeners do need to remember here is that often in the mainstream media there is, and also within the FBI circles, there is a myth, or there is, I think, something that is portrayed, and it's the fact that, you know, people need to be protected, that the terrorism laws now need to be protected, need to protect people. What we need to realise is that before 9/11, COINPELTRO existed, and the Black Panther movement and other famous movements around Australia were being policed, and the police attempted to wipe them out. And we now have Black Panthers who may die in prison, and who have been incarcerated by the police and the FBI as a way to criminalise dissent. So, yeah, there's a lot going on, and we'll now hear the statement by Mamiya, and we will end the show with a song after that. So take care and stay safe.
When war crimes ain't war crimes. In the last few years, we've all seen nothing but mass violations of virtually every international human rights treaty. Torture, secret prisons, extraordinary rendition, violence against civilians, orders to ignore the Geneva Conventions. The list goes on and on. How has the American government dealt with this state of affairs? It has virtually ignored it. There have been a few military prosecutions against relatively low-level people, but there is a steel ceiling above which the prosecutors dare not go. That's because the violations of international law go to the highest levels of the U.S. government. Writer Leela Rajiva argues in her remarkable The Language of Empire, Abu Ghraib and the American Media, that the tortures at Abu Ghraib prison on the outskirts of Baghdad show something deep and ugly in the American state. She writes, "The Prometheans of today acknowledge no limits except of their own imagining, and at least for now, the world that they find themselves in allows them the self-indulgence of that imagining. With such absolute power comes absolute corruption, only not the corruption that the law easily unmasks, the simple corruption of bribery and chicanery. The occupation of Iraq displays ample evidence of that as well. But the deeper corruption that rots the institutions of America today is one legitimated by law, whose presence is revealed not in the courthouse, but in the solitary recesses of prison cells hidden from the light. Torture is the insignia of this corrupt power. Torture is the deadly proof of the metastasizing cancer of American empire." Rajiva tells us many of the stories from Iraq that have been largely whitewashed from the safe coverage that the corporate media airs. She tells us the many cases where Iraqi women were raped by Americans and subjected to public humiliations. Perhaps if more Americans read, saw, or heard such accounts, they would not be mystified by the steady growing of the insurgency in Iraq, which is surely fueled in part by how Americans treated Iraqi men and women in prisons there. The corporate U.S. media has done more to misinform its public than to inform them. They keep Americans in the dark, while people all around the world know more about America than Americans. In this context, we can continue the illusion that the U.S. is doing good in this new kind of colonialism of Arab lands. It is this mad disinformation campaign that allows political figures to float the mad idea of more troops in Iraq. The somewhat tame Iraq Study Group report has come and gone, with supporters of the military-industrial complex working their media assets to ensure that their defense contractors keep getting paid. Discussions over Geneva Conventions might as well be about treaties with space aliens, as arcane as they are to most of us. When it comes to the empire, there is no higher law. The emperor has spoken. That is all that is needed to launch wars, torture, terrorize, bomb, imprison, kill, obliterate. That kind of logic can only lead to more disaster. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
What are you doing as a cop, you know? That's what I tell them.